If you want to join us as we take a look at, I guess it's transitioning into the workplace for people with dyslexia, and especially young adults, but older adults for that matter as well. We've spoken a little bit about dyslexia with children and the diagnosis, but once you're diagnosed and you go into the workplace, is it better to tell people that you have dyslexia? Do people tend to hide it and try and work through it? What has happened in your experience? 1-300-800-222. Text us on 0437-774-774. Shay Whistle is the founder of Dear Dyslexic and joins us on the program this morning. Hello, Shay.
Good morning. How are you?
Hey, Shay, firstly, tell us what your experience was like.
For me, at the age of 27, I was diagnosed and my experience was pretty poor. When I was diagnosed, there were no supports or services available for adults. I really didn't understand what dyslexia was or what that meant for me, and actually went into quite a big depression for a while as I tried to navigate through what it meant to have a learning disorder or a learning disability.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because there are so many varying degrees of dyslexia, and some people may not even know that they have it, but they know that they struggle in some ways. How important is it to actually get that diagnosis?
It's really important for people, I think, so they've got the answers as to why they're struggling. Because if you go throughout childhood, through education, and you don't have that assessment, then people's self-esteem and confidence can be significantly damaged because they're constantly told they're dumb or they're stupid or they can't do things, they're not going to get through school, they'll only get to TAFE. Lots of negative comments are made to them. So getting an assessment is really important to help, one, find out what's happening, and two, where to get the supports as a child. But what we find in Australia is the financial barrier to getting an assessment can be really costly, and a lot of families can't afford it, so many children can miss out, or the school system's not set up to ensure that all children get the possibility for an assessment. So we find that young people go into uni or TAFE and they tend to get assessed there if they get lucky enough to get through to that area, or they can miss out altogether and then struggle throughout their lives.
Is it also important as an adult, though, because it's so important, as you're saying, especially with children, and things have improved now since they were in the 60s and 70s when I was at school. However, things are improving now. But if you're an adult and you feel that there may have been or there may be dyslexia running through the family genetically, is it important then to even find out as an adult?
I think as an adult, it really depends. A lot of people come to us when they are struggling in the workplace or they want a career change and they would like to go back to uni or to do some further education, and they're questioning why they've always struggled. And, you know, we find people in their 70s getting assessments, people later in their careers, because they just don't understand why they've been struggling in a certain area, but they're really competent and able in all other aspects of work, but there's just this one area they've been struggling with. So I think for adults it can be, some people call it a revelation that they've been able to find out what's happening to them, and then to be able to get some support is really important, especially if you've had a really negative educational experience. Some what we find is people come through with a lot of trauma, and so it helps them to navigate that trauma and to get the support that they need.
Shay, do we have figures, any statistics on the number of people within the population that are likely or do have dyslexia?
It's around 10% of the population. Different countries, it varies in the, because of the way that it's assessed and diagnosed, but we work on the figure of 10%.
Which is a large percentage.
It is. It's the largest population out of the neurodiversity cohort of people that are struggling. And it's really important that particularly employers are aware of this, because they might be noting that their staff are struggling in this one area, but like I said, competent in all other areas, and that could be a reason why. And there's really easy fixes for some people that are low cost, and employers have a responsibility to be able to support their staff to make sure they're working at their full potential.
Ray joins us. Hello, Ray.
G'day.
What did you want to say, Ray?
Yeah, well, I'm dyslexic. I'm back in the 64, and back in the 60s when I was at school, Back then, they had no idea what it was, and pretty much, as you were saying, that it was a matter of I'm either stupid or dumb or lazy. And it was only through my own determination that I ended up starting up my own business. And I now currently employ a young apprentice who is also dyslexic, and I mentor her. So it's something that I think, for me, I think it's very much uncapped, the amount of talent that's out there with dyslexics. It's a huge resource that's not utilised yet.
Do you just want to comment on that, Shay?
Yes, I completely agree. It is an untapped resource, and you know, through the research I've done with La Trobe University, those with dyslexia are at the higher end of the unemployment scale compared to the rest of the population. And they are an untapped resource of people that are normally highly skilled that just need a little bit of support in one area. And I think it's great that Ray, you know, with the determination, which we see in all dyslexics that we work with, it's that determination and persistence to keep going that we see throughout the dyslexic population. So congratulations, Ray, on the amazing work you're doing. And then supporting another dyslexic apprentice, it's extremely important that they've got that support and understanding.
Ray, what extra support do you think that there needs to be? And do you think it's significant or important that people with dyslexia are comfortable in saying that they do have it?
You're talking to me?
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah, look, I think that the problem is that I know when I left school, you know, the teachers spoke to my parents and just said, look, you know, he's not doing any good here. Just get him a job, any job, and never let him lose. And that, you know, that was all right for a few years. But because I'm a very creative person, I just thought to myself, no, I can't live the rest of my life just doing a job that doesn't stimulate me. So you were saying before about do you hide it, or and a lot of dyslexics do hide it. For me, I learned very early after leaving school and being embarrassed a few times going into banks and trying to withdraw money and not being able to fill out the forms, that I came to my own decision that I would never hide it. And so I broadcast it to, you know, everybody. If I go anywhere, for example, buying a car, the salesperson has to read me the contract because I'm not buying a car unless I know what I'm signing up to.
Yeah.
And it's very important. I think if there's one thing that I would stress to dyslexics out there and parents of dyslexics is make sure they don't hide it. Hiding it is the worst thing. Ignorance is poison to dyslexics. So, and the thing is that we are so creative. There's so many things. Richard Branson's dyslexic. Kerry Packer was dyslexic. So there's a lot of entrepreneurs in the world are dyslexics. So, you know, as I said before, I can't iterate more, is that, you know, we're missing out. The world's missing out on a lot of very talented people.
Ray, thank you for that. And, Shay, within that, what sort of a workplace is a supportive one for people with dyslexia?
It's a workplace that has an open, trusting environment where people do feel safe to disclose, because Ray is right. A lot of people with dyslexia don't disclose their difficulties because of fear of discrimination, fear of not getting the next promotion, fear of what people will think of them. The list goes on around people's concerns around why they won't disclose in the workplace. But what we're finding is that when workplaces have an inclusive culture where diversity is accepted, where they are supportive of staff's areas that they need to work towards or to be supported of, then people are more likely to disclose they've got dyslexia. But most of the time they won't. And what we're finding is that when they do at the moment, because there's such a lack of awareness of dyslexia within the workplace, that when someone does disclose, they're not getting the support they need. And it's normally only a small portion that disclose that get that support, because either their manager's child's dyslexic or they've had other dyslexic staff, and so they know what they can do and how to help them. that the majority of the time employers haven't had that awareness, that training, that understanding, and so they think that it's going to be a cost to the organisation. And many dyslexics can find themselves out of a job or really struggling and having to move on to something else.
I've got a couple of texts here that are asking if you can quickly define what dyslexia is, and also someone, can you explain what dyslexia is, please?
So dyslexia at the core is a reading difficulty, so putting sounds together to make a word and then putting that word into a sentence. And so what happens then is people's reading can become impaired, so it can be slower. It can be people may miss words when they're reading it. And that's the core challenge, is that we have this reading difficulty, but then it has a flow-on effect to how we can write, because it can impact on our spelling, our grammar, our sentence structure. And for some people, they may have difficulties with maths as well. There's been association with dyslexia and maths. For myself, I have dyslexia and dysgraphia, so I have a writing disorder. So trying to put my thoughts on paper is really difficult for me, and so I need a lot of support in doing that. But what we know is that because of those core challenges, it has a significant impact on our working memory, can be impacted, our ability to retain information when someone's talking to us can be impacted, background noise can we can struggle with. So in a working environment, if we're in an open planned office, that can be challenging. And then the flow on effect can be poor mental health and well-being.
And of course, as we said in the beginning, there are varying degrees as well, from mild through to severe. So they could be smaller things. It could be struggling with B's and D's. It can be not necessarily having issues with comprehension, but also just with sounds as well. So they're all different types.
Yes, and you're right, it is varying. And I think if children are able to access intervention, then it reduces the severity of their dyslexia. And it never goes away. We've always got it, but intervention will help improve and help us learn how to improve our reading or to improve our writing. And that's why intervention, and then as children go through tutors, it's really important. And then when we get into the workplace, that workplace coaching or those extra reasonable adjustments to enable us to do our job.
Couple of texts here, one saying, our severely dyslexic daughter now works as a commercial lawyer. She failed prep and it took a lot of support early, says Mary in Baranyong as well.
Fantastic for their daughter. And that's it takes a lot of support from parents. They have to really push at the school level at the moment to get that extra support. But there's no stopping us when we have that support. And that's what the work we do is all about, is when you have those reasonable adjustments in place, you've had that tutoring or speech therapy when you're young, that then, you know, we can do whatever we want. It's just it takes us a bit longer and we need a bit more support.
George, hello.
Good morning.
Yes, George.
I'm 82 and dyslexic, and I was just classed as dumb. And when I was in fifth class, I spelled leg WG. And the teacher, the headmaster of the school, was my teacher, and I had to go to every class underneath mine and walk in and say egg EGG. And it was the most embarrassing thing that I've ever done in my life. And I'll never forgive him, and I never will. But yeah, I can't read out loud. My comprehension's absolutely atrocious. When I used to buy car manuals so I could work on my car, and to read a car manual and try and put it into practice was just hopeless. And so,
George, what did you end up doing for a job?
My father got me an apprenticeship as a motor bodybuilder.
Yeah.
That was in timber those days. Probably the worst place in Newcastle to do the job, but I did that, and then after that I went construction carpenter and done a lot of different jobs. I was put out of work in my mid-40s and ended up cleaning schools for the last bit of me.
George, are you comfortable with it now?
I am now, and what I'm very pleased about, that I've never been out of work.
Yep.
And in some jobs I've even had people chasing me to go and work for them, because one thing I could do is work and work hard, but when I was doing my apprenticeship and measuring things, I often used to go the wrong end of the... If I had to do something 6 foot and 1 inch, well, I'd go 5 foot and 11 inches. I'd go the wrong way of the 1 foot mark.
Yeah.
I used to scribble.
Isn't it, George, isn't it good that attitudes have changed now and we recognise that there are so many things that people with dyslexia can do and that there are significant and important people in our society?
Yeah, well, I've got a grandson who was dyslexic and had problems with learning, and he was sent to a place at Seaforth in Sydney to help him, and he ended up with a diesel mechanic. He and another chap always fought to be top of their class when he was doing his apprenticeship, and now he's got a very good job.
Good stuff. George, thank you. And that's such a good example of how attitudes have changed over the last little while, Shay. And with George, the loss of a person who could be have done lots of different things if given the opportunities.
Yes, and it's always makes me a bit sad to hear those stories of people that have struggled like that, because yeah, there are a lot of people that have lost opportunities to have a really fulfilled life because they weren't picked up or they haven't had the support they've needed. And things have changed. And even since I was 27, you know, that was, gosh, my maths is terrible, but at least 15 years ago now. And it's, you know, even then and since I've started the work at the foundation, there's been significant movement in Australia and it's been highly influenced by overseas. And it's really great to see those changes starting to come through.
Trish, hello.
Hi, I'm 53. I went through uni and became an accountant. I was diagnosed on the second time I did year 12. My biology teacher went, picked it up that I multi-choice, I was fine. Writing essays, I was absolute, you know, and those words don't really count for me. I really struggle now with email addresses just because anything that's a little bit off. So I'll just say, look, I'm dyslexic. Can you please, this is my email address. Send me my email and I'll reply to it. The other thing is under pressure, I get tired with just the volume and then I lose my language, like I start to slur. So when I was first employed, my boss, we were laughing about it afterwards and just saying, well, he was wondering what he employed because after a long day, I'd start to slur my words. I've also got a son now that's transitioning. He's doing his tertiary study and just with the writing and just finding his place in with different until he comes familiar with the actual word terms and he can memorise them all.
How important is it, because we've spoken with Shay about the importance of diagnosis. Do you think it's really important as well?
Really important because, like, it was sort of like I knew I wasn't stupid and I luckily went to a small rural school, so it didn't matter until I moved to the city to go and do year 12, that it was sort of hidden. And then when I sort of started doing those studies, I'm sitting there thinking, I'm not stupid. So once I got that diagnosis, it's sort of like, oh, is that what's causing the problem? At that time, it was wearing coloured glasses. That seemed to help with running words on the page. But the other thing, I think in small rural communities where people don't move, there would be a larger percentage because of that lineage of genetics going through. I would say that there's in large communities where people don't move, there would be a larger percentage of people with dyslexia. In the community I live in, I would nearly name three really large employers in town that would all be dyslexic.
Trish, thank you, because we haven't really spoken about the genetics, Shay, because when I was doing some reading on this, I was really interested to see that there's a very high chance of people who have dyslexia having children with dyslexia.
Yes. In our family, we're pretty sure it's come from my dad. He's extremely dyslexic. highly creative, highly skilled, but can't read. And then one of my brothers, myself, and then one of my nephews as well. So in our family, it's really, really strong. Usually it's between 30 to 60% if a parent is dyslexic, that their child could possibly be dyslexic as well. So that's usually when people come to us, that's one of our questions is, you know, is this something that you've noticed within your family? Because that can be a bit of an alarm bell for us. But sometimes people come to us and, as far as I know, no one has dyslexia. It just seems to be them. But more often than not, it does run in the family.
And could that mean that just because they don't know anyone within their family that has it, that they possibly will have it, but they not be aware?
Possibly, yes. And then sometimes it just sporadically can occur for someone. But it could also be that their family members haven't had an opportunity or they've never really asked the questions before to see whether other family members do have it. But it's definitely likely, and it's definitely in my family.
Sean has said, I think diagnosis is important as far as funding for treatment is concerned. Is that right?
Yes. Well, at the moment, there's not a lot of funding for treatment either. So it's a real struggle for people because, one, we've got the barrier of getting an assessment. And then once you've got that assessment, for both children and adults, there's really no funding at the moment. We're not covered under NDIS. The work at the foundation that we do, we've been advocating very strongly for dyslexia to sit under the NDIS. And when we've advocated to government, we've tried to explain to them that the majority of people with dyslexia won't need NDIS support, or it might be quite small. So families and individuals have to spend quite a bit of money in getting access to interventions or the support that's needed. But once we're in the workplace, workplaces by law need to be putting reasonable adjustments in, and they can actually get funding through the federal government to put reasonable adjustments in. I think it's up to $50,000. So it can be very low cost for an organisation to put that extra support in for their staff. But outside of that, individuals usually have to fund it themselves. If you see a speech pathologist, you can get a little bit of a rebate. But generally, tutors, workplace coaching like we do, there isn't any financial support. So it can be a real barrier for people to get the extra help they need, which is a real pity because, again, they're not able to work to their full ability when they should be.
And I should say, Shay, as I'm talking to people, if you would like to ask any of the listeners that call in anything, you're more than welcome as well. Claire, hello.
Oh, good morning. It's really interesting. My family has very strong genetic lines with dyslexia, and I've got six brothers and sisters. There's 13 grandchildren, and a huge percentage of those are dyslexic, but every single one of them is very successful because they were diagnosed early and we knew the skills and what programs or what jobs they could go into. My daughter's a nurse and she's very, very successful. She's moved through and she's nurse doing something else now. And I heard them talking the other day. They discussed things as their cousins. And there's all these programs you put on your computer, but you don't look dyslexic. It works it out for you.
That's
and they network between themselves.
That was one of the things I wanted to know, Claire, is the ability for people to be able to pass courses and go through uni and to be able to do that, and whether or not computers have helped a lot.
Every single one of them's been to uni. They're successful. Some are builders. Some are doing other things. We recognised it early, and it was so interesting. I was talking to a cousin of mine. She's got four children. They went to the best schools in Melbourne. They're all dyslexic. One of them's a lawyer. They're all very successful. And I think the most important thing is to be diagnosed and to own up to it. And I've heard my daughter, I heard a doctor say, she said to a doctor one day, I'm dyslexic, I'm sorry, you're just going to have to get used to it. And he just laughed. You've really got to be honest. And they've got so many other skills. They're so creative. They can run, once they find out what their skills are, they're fantastic.
And that family support is so important, and that network that you've got within your family is wonderful, and we find that that's when people can really thrive, is when they've got really supportive families and those support networks to help them. And so it sounds like in your family you've got that down. We're fantastic.
But that's just general conversation, but I'd appeal to anyone out there to ask the question. These programs on the computers make you look fantastic.
I want to talk to Shay about that. Claire, thank you very much for calling, and what an amazing job you're doing, all of you are doing within the family. Mm. Shay, my nephew has severe dyslexia, and I had a cousin with, and I haven't been diagnosed, so I don't know if I have or not. However, computers made a very big difference for my nephew, who's now a director, a film director, because he could do most of his work through computers. Has computers made a big difference for people with dyslexia?
I think computers, yes, but what we're noting now is actually phones. So all technology, like as technology advances, it feels like those with dyslexia are taking more and more steps to reaching their success, because technology is just amazing. You know, the basics that any person with dyslexia, but anyone without dyslexia, like spell check is an example of how, you know, that in itself has changed the way we're able to articulate ourselves on paper. The text-to-speech is another thing, so people are able to talk into their computers, or what we're seeing now is people talking into their phones, like Siri can help, you know, just getting around, like we used to have a Malways, people who might remember those, but now we can use our phone to navigate. And for me, that's really important because I get lost. I'm terrible at navigation. I can't do my lefts and rights. So for me, the phone, but there's technology on the phone like Speechify that you can put on your computer as well. And people don't need to know that you've got dyslexia, because these apps and different things you can put on your phones and your computer now are really supportive. And even Microsoft has a lot of inbuilt functionality now. And if you think from a workplace perspective, again, that's less of a cost to them because there's already things on the computer that are set up to help us to do our work.
Okay, interesting. Sandy says that, hi, I'm dyslexic in my first language, which is English, but not my second, which is Spanish, or in other languages that I've picked up by ear, says Sandy, which is an interesting point too.
Mm, that is. And we find that people that are trying to learn a second language can generally struggle if they're dyslexic. And maybe because she's listening to it by ear rather than reading, because we've got a reading difficulty, that may be why it's easier for her.
Alan, hello.
Good morning. Look, I'd like to say something about teaching people with dyslexia. I had a gig teaching labour management in a tertiary institution. They didn't like photocopying in that place, and so I had a discussion paper up on, prior to every session that we had, teaching session, had a discussion paper up on the internet. The students used to read the discussion paper, then in the class we would talk about what was on it. One of the kids said to me, I really like your sessions, your teaching sessions. I said, why is that? He said, well, I'm dyslexia. When you sit down and have those discussions, he said, I really learn. You know, the thing is, if you put the paper up on the internet, everyone in the world can read it. So they're getting a freebie, a free education. So that's not a good thing, probably. But the thing is, if the kids sit down and discuss, if you're dyslexic, you're not reading anything, but you're getting the content, the interaction between the lecturer and the student. That's how they learn.
Thank you, Alan. We'll just take a couple more calls, Shay, then I'd like to talk about what you do at Dear Dyslexia as well. Dyslexic. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, mate. How are you going?
Good, Dennis.
Trev, mate, I'm amazed at the will of these people, whether they're autistic or whether they're dyslexic or some disability and whatever, the strength within themselves to keep going and to overcome it. My wife is 85% vision impaired and has a few disabilities, and I just say to her of a night, do you remember what you did today? The amazing, they're only little things, but to them, and I was at the hospital yesterday, a lady got out of the car, she could barely walk, she had crutches, and I said, are you right? She said, yes, I am. She said, because I'm still learning.
Dennis, I want to talk about, because is that willpower an important thing, especially as an adult, when you are either transitioning into the workforce as a young adult or as an adult working within any workplace, that will an important part to continue with, Shay?
Definitely, we've seen that resilience and that persistence seems to be really strong through the research that we've done. And even when people are faced with adversity going into the workplace, they're still showing up, they're still trying their best. And it's we've seen it throughout when they go through school, when they get into higher education and then in the workplace. It feels that, you know, we're constantly faced with daily challenges because we're in a world of words. It's everywhere. You have to be able to read. Technology's helping reduce that. But, you know, daily challenges appear for us, and so we have to navigate those. And I think that that persistence and willpower is extremely strong and is definitely a strength in people with dyslexia.
Graham, good morning.
Hello, Trevor. Hello, Shay. How are you?
Good morning. Good, thank you.
I'm sorry I've come in late on this conversation.
That's all right.
I've been drifting in and out of sleep. I don't know whether you mentioned, we have a son who was dyslexic. He's now 45. He's in business for himself and doing very well. We tried all the things. We tried the Linda Mood method. We had the coloured glasses. Nothing seemed to work except we would. A friend then told us, whatever he's interested in, give him carte blanche to go and buy the magazines he likes, and he'll get sick of looking at pictures and learn to read the captions under pictures, and that worked.
Do you
that
know?
Worked for us.
Isn't the thing, I mean, Shay, is it different things are going to work for different people? There are great programs set in place within schools to assist people with dyslexia in reading. And so many times you hear actually Graham saying there that their son ended up having their own businesses because that seemed to be a way that people would be able to use their own skills and talents without having to be within a set workplace, Shay?
Yes, so we do find that... they say internationally around 40% of entrepreneurs are dyslexic, and I really think it's because we don't fit into the box within the workplace, that normal structure we struggle in, and we don't have the support we need, and so we're finding different avenues where we can work to our strengths. And for a lot of people, it's, you know, running their own business where they can set their day up the way that works for them. They can, you know, start early or finish late, and they have their own structure rather than the normal workplace structure, which then enables them to thrive. So it's not uncommon to hear of dyslexic people starting their own businesses.
Or working in fields where you can talk and not write.
That, yeah, exactly right. Because we, as you said earlier, it's on a spectrum of mild to severe, and being able to be in an area where we can work to our strengths is really, really important. And where we don't have to read all the time, because we find that people just become so mentally exhausted by the end of the day trying to manage that it can have a significant impact then on our mental health and well-being.
What do you do at Dear Dyslexia?
So we work across four areas. We do a lot of advocacy and awareness raising, particularly with federal and state government. We provide training in the workplace and in higher education. We're just about to launch our second e-learning module on how to support staff that have dyslexia and that are neurodiverse. We provide peer support programs, so we have a 1-800 helpline. We have coaching, particularly in the workplace, to support individuals. We have a social media following. For some dyslexics, that's not their thing because they don't want to be out there writing on social media, which I completely understand. And we work in research with La Trobe University, and our research is all focused around adults, their mental health and well-being, and their workplace experiences, but also the employer's experience of how they work with dyslexic employees and what they're doing to support them as well.
What a terrific thing to be doing. Do you enjoy your job?
I love it. It's a, it was born out of necessity, and I've never been up at 4 o'clock in the morning, apart from when I was feeding my daughter, who's now one. But, you know, when you're passionate and you love what you do, and this is such important work in Australia, we're the only adult organisation, we're the only ones researching around adults' experiences at the moment, and it's, you know, to be able to hear different people's stories that have called in today is so exciting to me.
Shay,
I will go back to bed.
Go back and have a good sleep. Thank you very much for joining us on the program this morning.
Thank you. It was wonderful.
Shay Whistle, who's the founder of Dear Dyslexia. We're heading off to the next ABC News.